Now a green sign hurtles through space toward a blue planet. Letters etched into the sign read, Turner. Now sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter sitting atop the revolving Earth. Words appear in sync with the beeping signal, a radio picture. Now titles appear in a black and white film. Radio Pictures presents King Kong. Executive producer, David O. Selznick. A Marion C. Cooper and Ernest B. Schoedsack production. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Read by Nick Mills. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. A DVS note. The 30s-era special effects in this film involve the animation of models superimposed onto live-action black-and-white footage. More titles appear. Chief Technician Willis H. O'Brien. Art Technicians Mario Larinaga and Byron L. Crabb. Screenplay by James Creelman and Ruth Rose, from an idea conceived by Marion C. Cooper and Edgar Wallace. Photograph by Eddie Linden, Vernon Walker, and J.O. Taylor. Music by Max Steiner. Sound effects by Murray Spivak. Settings by Carol Clark and Al Herman. Recorded by Earl A. Walcott. Film editor, Ted Cheeseman. The players, Fay Wray, Robert Armstrong, Bruce Cabot, Frank Reicher, Sam Hardy, Noble Johnson, Steve Clemento, James Flavin, and King Kong, the eighth wonder of the world. Now an old Arabian proverb appears. And the prophet said, and lo, the beast looked upon the face of beauty, and it stayed its hand from killing. And from that day, it was as one dead. Nighttime. A tugboat chugs into a harbor, blowing a cloud of smoke. The New York City skyline looms in the distance. Nearby, a large freighter sits moored to the dock. An old bearded sailor carrying a lantern waddles past the ship. A 40-ish man wearing a fashionable black coat and bowler hat briskly approaches.
Say, is this the moving picture ship?
Adventure? Yeah. Are you going on this crazy voyage?
What's crazy about it?
I don't know, but everybody around here is talking about that crazy fella that's running it.
Carl Denham?
I guess that's the name. They say he ain't scared of nothing. If he wants a picture of a lion, he just goes up to him and tells him to look pleasant.
He's a tough egg, all right, but why all this talk about this voyage being crazy?
Well, everybody around the docks is talking about the cargo, for one thing. And I never did see a ship this size with such a crew.
Not enough men to handle it?
Not enough. Three times more than the ship needs. I don't see where they're going to have room enough to sleep.
Hey, down there. What do you want?
Denham aboard?
Well, who are you?
My name's Weston, the theatrical agent.
Oh, why didn't you say so? Come on aboard.
A handsome sailor.
Denham's getting wild. I hope you've got some good news for him.
In the captain's bridge.
Well, Mr. Denham, you know the reasons for hurrying as well as I do. Insurance companies found out we're carrying explosives, and the marshal will be aboard tomorrow or next day.
And I suppose if we make a legal case of it, we'll be tied up for months, huh?
With enough ammunition to blow up the harbor?
The captain holds an egg-shaped object.
What do you think the marshal will say to these new gas bombs of yours? According to you, one of them is enough to knock out an elephant.
We've got to get to where we're going before the monsoon starts.
Well, you can trust me to see you through a blow, I hope.
Well, I don't get sore, Skipper. But you know what it means to run into the tropical rainy season when you're trying to make an outdoor picture. Months wasted, money gone, and nothing to show for it.
Still, you always bring back a picture. And everybody says there's only one Carl Denham. Mm.
Weston enters with a handsome sailor.
Weston, I was just going ashore to call you.
If I'd known that, I'd have waited.
Oh, this is the skipper, Weston, a theatrical agent. I guess you met Driscoll, the first mate?
Yes.
Well, Weston, how about the girl?
It can't be done, Denham.
What? It's got to be done. Now, look here, Weston. Somebody's interfered with every girl I've tried to hire. And now all the agents in town have shut down on me. All but you. You know I'm square.
Everybody knows you're square, Denham. But you've got a reputation for recklessness that can't be glossed over. And then you're so secretive.
You said it.
But even the skipper and the mate don't know where they're going. What?
There you are. I've got a conscience, Denham. I can't send a young, pretty girl such as you ask on a job like this without telling her what to expect.
And what is she to expect?
To go off on a trip for no one knows how long, to some spot you don't even hint at, the only woman on a ship with the toughest mugs I ever looked at.
Denham cracks a smile.
I mean the crew.
Good Lord, you talk as if I never brought anybody back alive. The skipper and Driscoll have stuck to me on two trips. They look well enough.
Sure, we're healthy.
There's a different thing taking a girl into danger.
Then I suppose there's no danger in New York. Listen, there are dozens of girls in this town tonight that are in more danger than they'll ever see with me.
Yeah, but they know that kind of danger.
You never had a woman in any of your other pictures. Why do you want one in this?
Holy mackerel, do you think I want to haul a woman around?
Then why?
Because the public, bless them, must have a pretty face to look at.
Sure. Everybody likes romance.
Well, isn't there any romance or adventure in the world without having a flapper in it?
Well, Mr. Denham, why not take a picture in a monastery?
Yeah. Makes me sore. I go out in sweat blood to make a swell picture, and then the critics and the exhibitors all say, if this picture had love interest, it would gross twice as much. All right. The public wants a girl, and this time I'm going to give them what they want.
I don't know where you're going to get her.
I've got to get her, Weston. We've got to leave here on the morning tide. We've got to be gone by daylight.
Why?
Well, there's a good reason.
Everything I hear about this thing makes me like it less. I'm glad I didn't get you a girl.
You are, eh? Well, I'll show you. You think I'm going to give up just because you can't find me a girl with a backbone? Listen, I'm going out and make the greatest picture in the world, something that nobody's ever seen or heard of. You'll have to think up a lot of new adjectives when I come back.
Where are you going?
I'm going out and get a girl for my picture, even if I have to marry one.
He marches out. Now, bright lights glitter in Times Square. As boxy sedans drive through the streets, a taxi pulls up to a curb. The broad-shouldered, slick-haired Denham sits in back. He gazes at a sign hanging over a nearby building's entrance. Woman's Home Mission. Climbing out, Denham pays the driver, then eyes a long line of women waiting outside the mission door.
Stand aside, please. I'll take care of your case later.
The women are mainly old or homely.
Say, lay off the shoving, will you?
Oh, I didn't mean to shove you. Excuse me.
What do they give you in this joint?
Soup tonight, coffee and sinkers in the morning.
Shaking his head, Denham turns away and crosses the street. Moments later, he approaches a produce stand. A burly, mustached vendor nods to him. As they confer for a moment, a young woman creeps up to the stand. She slowly reaches for a large apple. Glancing up, the vendor spots her and rushes over.
Ha-ha! I catch you, you stealer! Now I'll catch a cop. You like that, huh?
No, I didn't. Let me go. I wanted to, but I didn't.
I have enough of these stealers.
Dry up. The kid didn't take anything.
I didn't, Troy. I didn't.
Well, three people this week.
Here's a buck.
A buck?
Scram.
The woman begins to faint. Denham catches her. He gazes into her face for the first time. She has porcelain skin and shining eyes.
Hey! Taxi!
He helps her to the curb. A little later, Denham stands at a counter inside a diner. A white-jacketed waiter hands him a coffee mug. Denham takes it over to the slender young woman, who sits at a table. A tray of empty dishes rests beside her.
Feeling better?
Yes, thank you. You're very kind.
Don't you fool yourself. I'm not bothering about you just out of kindness.
He takes a seat next to her.
How'd you ever get into this fix?
Bad luck, I guess. But then there are a lot of girls like me.
Not many with your looks.
I can get by in good clothes, all right, but when a girl gets too shabby...
No family?
I'm supposed to have an uncle someplace.
You ever do any acting?
I used to do extra work now and then over on Long Island. Studio's closed now.
What's your name?
Ann Darrow.
Fine. I've got a job for you. Costumes on the ship will fit you. Broadway shops are still open. I can get some clothes for you there. Come on.
What is it?
It's money and adventure and fame. It's the thrill of a lifetime and a long sea voyage that starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
No, wait. I don't understand. You must tell me. I do want the job, so, but I can't...
Oh, I see. No, you've got me wrong. This is strictly business.
Well, I only wanted...
Sure you did. I got a little excited and I forgot you didn't understand. Listen, I'm Carl Denham. Ever hear of me?
Yes. You make moving pictures in jungles and places.
That's right. And I picked you for the lead in my next picture. We sail at 6.
Where to?
A long way off. Now listen, Ann. I'm on the level. No funny business.
What do I have to do?
Just trust me and keep your chin up.
He holds out his hand. They smile and shake. At dawn on the freighter, Driscoll, the first mate, stands on deck, surveying the men. Tall and lanky, he wears a wool peacoat and sailor's hat with a gold-braided visor.
Hey, you men on that winch! Get down below on the deck and help with these hatches!
Several sailors jump down onto the deck to secure hatches. Ann comes up unseen behind Driscoll.
Hurry this line forward! Forward, you farmhand, up here!
He hits Ann by mistake.
What are you doing up here?
I just wanted to see.
Oh, you just wanted to see? Well, I'm sorry. Take that line fast! That girl Denham picked up last night, aren't you?
Yes. I think this is awfully exciting. I've never been on a ship before.
Well, I've never been on one with a woman before.
I guess you don't think much of women on ships, do you?
No, they're a nuisance.
Well, I'll try not to be.
You've been on the way already. Bring that ladder aboard! Well, you better stay below.
What? The whole voyage?
I'm afraid I didn't apologize very good for hitting you just now. That was a pretty tough rap on the chin.
Uh-huh.
A tugboat moves up alongside the ship.
Well, we're off.
We're off.
She clasps her hands together in excitement. Later, the ship glides over the open sea. On deck, Anne stands on a coiled rope, gazing over the side of the ship. A Chinese man sits beside her, peeling a potato.
Say, Charlie, how many potatoes do you think you've peeled in 6 weeks?
Too many.
Sailors eat an awful lot, don't they?
All time eat. Someday me go back China, never see no more potato.
Oh, Charlie, isn't the ocean wonderful?
Very pretty. Pretty soon you'll be a awesome sailor, only not eat so much.
I'd like to be. Only, of course, it wasn't so nice up north when it was cold and rough, was it?
Ocean very nice when you order weather or some eggs for breakfast.
She chuckles, then glances up as Driscoll approaches.
Hello, Ann.
Hello, Jack.
Where you been all morning?
Trying on costumes for Mr. Denham. He's going to make some tests of me this afternoon here on deck if the light's right.
Tests? Why?
Oh, to see which side of my face looks best and all that.
Both sides look all right to me.
Yes, but you're not the movie director.
If I was, you wouldn't be here.
Well, is that a nice thing to say?
Oh, this is no place for a girl.
I wish you wouldn't keep harping on that. It's very mean of you. Anybody'd think I'd been a lot of trouble. I haven't. You can't say I've been one bit of trouble to anyone. Have I?
Sure you have. Sure you have.
I don't see... Well, how?
Just being around's trouble.
Oh, dear, and I thought everything was going so nicely.
Oh, you're all right, but women just can't help being a bother. Made that way, I guess.
Well, anyhow. I've had the happiest time of my life on this old ship.
That's fine.
As she looks away, he studies her pretty face. She has a delicate cleft in her chin.
Say, did you really mean that, Ann?
Of course I mean it. Everyone's so nice to me, Mr. Denham and the skipper. And don't you think the skipper's a sweet old lamb?
I'd hate to have him hear me say that.
Iggy's nice to me. Iggy likes me better than he likes anybody on board. Don't you, Iggy?
A monkey crouches at their feet. She pets him.
That's right. Of course you do.
Beauty and the Beast, eh?
Well, now, I never thought I was good looking.
Oh, Ann, will you put on one of those costumes? The light's about right for those tests now.
All right, Mr. Denham. I won't be a minute.
She leaves.
Beauty and the Beast.
Mr. Denham? I'm going to do some butting in.
What's your trouble, Driscoll?
When do we find out where we're going?
Pretty soon now.
You going to tell us what happens when we get there?
How can I? I'm not a fortune teller.
Well, hang it, you must have some idea what you're after.
What's the matter, Jack? You're going soft on me?
You know I'm not. Not for myself. For Ann.
Oh, you have gone soft on her, eh? I've got enough troubles without a love affair to complicate things. Better cut it out, Jack.
Love affair. You think I'm going to fall for any dame?
I never knew it to fail. Some big hard-boiled egg gets a look at a pretty face and bang, he cracks up and goes sappy.
Now, who's going sappy? Listen, I haven't run out on you, have I?
No, you're a pretty tough guy. But if beauty gets you, you... I'm going right into a theme song here.
Say, what are you talking about?
It's the idea of my picture. A beast was a tough guy, too. He could lick the world. But when he saw beauty, she got him. He went soft. He forgot his wisdom, and the little fellas licked him. Think it over, Jack.
Mr. Denham, the skipper wants you up on the bridge. He says we've reached the position you marked.
Good. Come on, Jack, you're in on this. I'm going to spill it.
Later, in the bridge.
There's our noon position. 2 south, 90 east. Now, you promised me some information when we reached these latitudes.
Way west of Sumatra.
And way out of any waters I know. I know the East Indies like I do my own hand, but I've never been here.
Where do we go from here?
Southwest.
Southwest? Well, there's nothing. Nothing for thousands of miles.
Keep your shirt on, Skipper. We're not going thousands of miles. Here's the island we're looking for.
Denham takes out a map.
Well, that position is... Let's have the big chart.
You won't find that island on any chart. That was made by the skipper of a Norwegian bark.
Well, he must have been kidding.
No, he wasn't. Listen. A canoe full of natives from this island was blown to sea. When the bark picked him up, there was only one alive. He died before they reached port, but not before the skipper had pieced together a description of the island and got a fairly good idea of where it lies.
Where'd you get hold of it?
In Singapore, 2 years ago. The skipper knew I'd be interested.
Does he believe it himself?
I don't know, but I do. Here. Here's what the island looks like.
The map shows a dotted line running up to a small island.
Here's a long sandy peninsula. The only possible landing place is through this reef. Rest of the shoreline is sheer precipice, hundreds of feet high. And across the base of that peninsula, cutting it off from the rest of the island, is a wall.
A wall?
Built so long ago that the people who lived there have slipped back, forgotten the higher civilization that built it. But that wall is as strong today as it was centuries ago. The natives keep that wall in repair. They need it.
Why?
There's something on the other side of it. Something they fear.
A hostile tribe.
As the mustache skipper consults the map, Denham turns away. Stuffing his hands into his pockets, he glances back.
Did you ever hear of Kong?
Why, yes. Some native superstition, isn't it? A god or a spirit or something.
Well, anyway, neither beast nor man. Something monstrous, all-powerful, still living, still holding that island in a grip of deadly fear.
The skipper shoots Jack Driscoll a look.
Well, every legend has a basis of truth. I tell you, there's something on that island that no white man has ever seen.
And you expect to photograph it?
If it's there, you bet I'll photograph it.
Suppose it doesn't like having its picture taken.
Well, now you know why I brought along those cases of gas bombs.
Later, Denham sets up a camera on deck as Anne climbs up in a gown with long trailing sleeves.
Oh, you put on the Beauty and Beast costume, eh?
Mm-hmm. It's the prettiest.
All right. Just stand right over there.
I'm sort of nervous. Suppose I don't photograph well.
You don't have to worry about that. If I hadn't been sure, I wouldn't have brought you halfway around the world.
What'll I do?
Well, we'll start with a profile. When I start cranking, I hold it a minute and then turn slowly toward me. You see me. You smile a little, then you listen, and then you laugh. All right? Camera.
Denham cranks a handle, spinning film through the camera. Turning away from the lens, Anne gazes into the distance. Charlie and two sailors watch from a ladder.
Looks kind of silly, don't it?
Pretty damn, huh?
You think maybe he'd like to take my picture, huh?
Them cameras cost money. Shouldn't think he'd risk it.
Denham stops cranking.
Well, that's fine, Anne. Now we'll try one with a filter, eh?
Do you always take the pictures yourself?
Ever since the trip I made to Africa, I'd have got a swell picture of a charging rhino, but the cameraman got scared. That darn fool, I was right there with a rifle. Seems he didn't trust me to get the rhino before it got him. I'm fooled with cameraman sense to do it myself.
Think he's crazy, Skipper?
Just enthusiastic.
Now, Anne, in this one you're looking down. When I start to crank, you look up slowly. You're quite calm. You don't expect to see a thing. Then you just follow my directions. All right? Camera. Look up slowly, Ann. That's it. You don't see anything. Now look higher. Still higher. Now you see it. You're amazed. You can't believe it. Your eyes open wider. It's horrible, Ann, but you can't look away. There's no chance for you, Ann. No escape. You're helpless, Ann. Helpless. There's just one chance. If you can scream, but your throat's paralyzed. Try to scream, Ann. Try. Perhaps if you didn't see it, you could scream. Throw your arms across your eyes and scream, Ann. Scream for your life.
Jack watches in horror.
What's he think she's really going to see?
Now, a heavy fog rolls over the ocean as the ship trudges through the water. On deck, Jack Driscoll, Skipper Engelhorn, Denham, Anne, and others gaze into the horizon. Anne's curly blonde tresses brush against the neck of her raincoat.
This infernal fog? Sure of your position, Skipper?
Of course. Last night, before this fog shut down, I got a good sight.
We should be near the island.
We don't see it when this fog lifts. We never will. We've quartered these parts.
You can't see a hand in front of your face.
Hey, Charlie, I wish you'd make your soup as thick as this.
Nearby, a sailor pulls a rope up out of the water.
No bottom at 30!
Norwegian skipper must have been guessing at the position.
How will we know it's the right island?
The mountain that looks like a skull.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten. You told me. Skull Mountain.
Quite a deep 20!
Shallowing fast. Mr. Brake, dead slow.
Dead slow, sir.
Confound this fog.
Quite a deep 16!
What's she draw, Skipper?
4.
Why don't the old man heave to till it clears?
Tain't the old man. It's that crazy guy, Denham.
Listen. You hear anything?
No.
Breakers ahead!
Let go!
Everyone peers anxiously into the fog.
That's not breakers. That's drums.
Daytime. The fog has lifted. The ship is anchored just offshore of an island. A mountain with a skull shape looms in the distance. A short wall surrounds it. Black birds flap past as the skipper looks through a pair of binoculars. Denham climbs on deck.
Well, Skipper, now that the fog's lifted, do you see anybody?
Not a living thing.
Funny they haven't spotted us. I'd think the whole population would be on the beach.
Listen.
Maybe they have spotted us and they're signaling. Well, Skipper, do you believe me now? There it is. Skull Mountain, the wall, everything just like on my funny little map. Come on, let's get started.
All right. 12 men go ashore with you and the rest stay aboard.
Have you got a good man with those gas bombs?
Uh-huh.
I think you better go along, Skipper. You may be able to talk to these birds ashore.
All right. Mr. Adams.
Aye, sir.
You'll take charge of the ship.
Aye, aye, sir.
I'm going ashore with you, aren't I?
You bet.
I don't think she ought to go till we find out what's going on.
Now, wait a minute. Who's running the show? I found out from experience always to keep my cast and my cameras right with me. Never can tell when you'll want them.
Yeah, but you're crazy to risk it.
Now, Jack, run along and deal out the rifles and ammunition. And get me a couple of huskies to carry my stuff. And, Jack, don't forget the costume box. If we're lucky enough, we may get a swell shot right away. Come on, Ed.
Sailors load equipment into a rowboat.
All right, boys, let's go. Take it easy with that camera.
Okay.
Plenty of ammunition for those guns?
Yes, sir. Be careful with those bombs.
All right, Franks, now we'll get a look at Denham's Island.
Stand by to lower away.
The sailors grip ropes, preparing to release the boat. Later, the rowboat glides up to the shore. It's weighted down with about 24 passengers and equipment. In the distance, the wall runs along the perimeter of the massive mountain. Several of the men hop out and drag the boat onto the beach, hauling it with ropes. Moments later, the boat rests on the water's edge near several native canoes. Anne stands in the rowboat, glancing around while the men unload. Denham surveys their work as Jack carries Anne to shore.
Hey, you with the camera, stick close to me.
Okay, Mr. Denham.
Who's got the bomb?
I have, sir.
Now watch your step with him. There's enough trichloride in there to put a herd of hippos to sleep.
Aye, aye, sir.
What queer-looking boats.
Yeah. Outrigger canoes.
Let's go. I want 2 men left here to guard the boat.
It's all attended to, sir.
Good.
We all ready then? Come on.
The group heads inland. A little later, they approach empty huts not far from the wall. The wall is 100 feet tall with a wooden gate which is tightly shut.
Not a soul in sight. People must all be gathered up ahead there.
That wall, Skipper. What do you think of that, eh?
Colossal. It might almost be Egyptian.
Yeah, but what's on the other side of that wall? That's what I want to know.
Who do you suppose could have built it?
Oh, I was up at Angkor once. That's bigger than this, and nobody knows who built it.
Oh, boy, what a chance. What a picture.
As everyone listens, Denham gestures to the group.
Come on.
They inch closer and closer to the wall.
Hear that? They're saying, come, come.
Hope you talk their lingo, Skipper.
You catch any words yet?
I'm not sure. It sounds something like the language the Nias Islanders speak.
What do you suppose is happening?
Oh, they're up to some of their heathen tricks. But don't go rushing out to sea.
All right, but isn't it exciting?
Sure. I wish we'd left you on the ship.
Oh, I'm so glad you did.
Wait, easy now. Wait till I see what goes on.
Denham creeps up to a thicket of dry stalks and parts them to peek through. Several yards away, the entire native community has gathered in front of the gate.
Holy mackerel, what a show. Hey, Skipper, come here and get a load of this.
The captain sidles up to him.
Ever see anything like that before in your life?
In the center of the group, musicians beat tom-tom drums as men dance in a circle. The dancers wear grass skirts and costumes made of gorilla fur with long, fuzzy sleeves. Nearby, a native teenage girl sits at the feet of a burly chieftain who wears an elaborate headdress. Trembling, she stares down at her lap while women place blossoms into her hair. Several leis cover her bare breasts. Off to the side, men stand at attention with spears and shields scowling fiercely. White face paint highlights their broad features. In the center, the gorilla dancers beat their chests, thrashing their arms. Denham takes it all in, his eyes wide and eager.
Boy, if I could only get a picture before they see us. Hey, you with the camera. Come here.
A sailor brings it over to him.
I want to see.
Come on.
Pull up. Be careful.
As Denham sets up the camera, Anne edges closer. Taking the skipper's hand, she leans against it. In the crowd of natives, the burly chieftain spots the group. His mouth falls open in surprise. With a frown, he raises his staff. The natives turn to stare at the small crew.
Too late, they see us.
Let's beat it.
Hey, what are you running for?
No use trying to hide now. Everybody come out in plain sight.
Anne and the sailors warily step out from behind the thicket of stalks. The chieftain glares at them.
Badu! Makaminikol in sorrow!
The barrel-chested chieftain marches forward, flanked by two guardsmen. The crowd of natives parts to allow him passage. He grips a ceremonial staff, which stands a foot taller than his own 6 feet. A cape hangs down his back. Long feathers jut from his massive afro. Tribal markings scar his face.
Hey, let's scram out of here.
Stand still, you fool.
Steady, boys. Bluff them.
Denham and the others keep their eyes trained on the approaching chieftain.
Watu! Kamadi! Kamadi!
Come on, Skipper. Make him a friendly speech.
The skipper takes an uneasy step, then raises his hand in salute.
Tabe. Bala kum no nohi. Bala. Bala.
Bala riri. Tusko. Tusko.
He understands you, Skipper. What does he say?
Telling us to get out.
Well, talk him out of it. Ask him what goes on.
Vani di humya. Malem ani humya vana. He says the girl there is the bride of Kong.
Great! Find out what they're gonna do.
A native rushes forward.
Gunasigasi!
Kasko!
What's that?
It must be the witch doctor. He says the ceremony is spoiled because we've seen it.
Well, calm the old boy down. What's the word for friend?
Bala.
Bala! Bala!
Hulya!
The chieftain and witch doctor step closer to them.
Steady with those rifles, boys.
The chieftain points to Anne.
Sita! Balam! Balam Avakero!
What's that? He says, look at the golden woman.
Yeah, blondes are scarce around here.
Balam Avakero! Kong Wa Bisa! Kao Bisa por Kong!
It's a gift for Kong, he says.
Good Lord.
Yama! Table Balam Nahi!
Wants to buy her.
Send a seat to Malam Atikardia. Malam Afakeno.
He's offering to trade six of his women for Anne.
Jack scowls.
You got her into this, Denim.
The skipper shakes Tida. His head at the chieftain.
Tida. Malam Ani Rota Nahi.
The chieftain trudges another step closer. Anne grips Jack's arm in terror.
I'm going to take her back to the ship.
Better all get out of here before they think to cut us off from the beach.
I guess so, but tell them we'll be back tomorrow to make friends.
Dulu. Dulu, he tego. Bala. Dulu.
Get going, Anne. Don't be scared. Everything's all right. Smile, Anne, and talk to Jack. Keep your chin up.
As the group turns away, Denim tilts his hat at a rakish angle and saunters off with the others. The natives stare after them. Nighttime. The ship sits anchored about a half a mile offshore. On board, Anne rests her chin on a ledge, gazing over the side of the ship. The tall, tan Jack comes up behind her.
Say, why aren't you in bed?
Oh, I can't sleep. The sound of those drums makes me nervous, I guess.
I think Denham's off his nut taking you ashore today.
Well, I was a little scared.
I guess you weren't the only one.
I wonder what we do next.
It's just what's worrying me. If Denham's such a fool for risks, there's no telling what he might ask you to do for this picture.
Well, after all he's done for me, I'd take any kind of chance for him.
Don't talk like that. Say, he's crazy enough to try anything.
Well, I won't go back on him.
And I think what might have happened today... See, if anything had happened to you...
Well, then you wouldn't be bothered with having a woman on board.
Don't laugh. I'm scared for you. I'm sort of... Well, I'm scared of you, too. And... Say... I guess I love you.
Why, Jack! You hate women.
Yeah, I know. But you aren't women. Say, Anne, I don't suppose, Well, you don't feel anything like that about me, do you?
Her eyelashes flutter as he smiles and draws her into a kiss. In the bridge, the skipper sits with Denham.
Mr. Driscoll, are you on deck?
Yes, sir.
He kisses Anne again.
You'll please come up on the bridge.
Anne reluctantly pulls away.
You go on, I'll wait here.
Jack starts to turn away, glances back once more, then heads off.
Yes, sir.
Anne follows him with her eyes, then presses the back of her hand to her full, pouty lips. Her mouth curls into a sly, sexy smile. On the water below... Two outrigger canoes filled with natives gently glide up to the rowboat tied to the ship. The witch doctor climbs out and gestures to the others, urging them forward. On deck, Anne gazes up at the stars with her back to the ocean. The witch doctor climbs a ladder flung over the side of the ship. The other natives quickly follow. Reaching the deck, he finds Anne dreamily leaning beside the ladder with her eyes shut. The witch doctor covers her mouth with his hand. Another native grabs her arm. Struggling in their grasp, she rips the second man's conch shell bracelet off his wrist. Unnoticed, it falls out of the deck. Nearby, a grizzled sailor taps ashes out of his pipe, oblivious to Anne's distress. The natives carry the young woman over the side of the ship and into a canoe. Both canoes paddle off. On the other side of the ship, the grizzled sailor stares out to sea. In the bridge, Jack studies a map with the skipper while Denham snoozes in a chair. The first mate puffs hard on a cigarette.
There, that's about it.
We'll make absolutely sure tomorrow noon.
Oh, it must be almost midnight.
He stares out a window.
Hey! Look at that!
Torches going through the village.
Yeah, looks like the night before election. Listen to them. Wonder what's up. Wish I could take pictures by firelight. I'd sneak ashore and get a scene now.
Oh, be sensible. We're lucky to be all safe aboard tonight.
Yeah, I guess so.
Jack climbs from the bridge to the deck and finds Charlie watching the distant island. He taps his shoulder.
Charlie, you see anything?
Me not see 1-2 hours. When we leave this place, me no light.
Jack throws away his cigarette and rushes up to a platform above the deck. Passing the bridge, he approaches a cabin door.
Ann?
He looks inside. Jack dashes down the aisle. On deck, Charlie glances at the floor and finds the conch shell bracelet. He picks it up and studies it, his eyes widening as he looks toward the island.
All hands on deck! Everybody on deck! Everybody on deck! All hands on deck! Everybody on deck! Everybody on deck!
All hands on deck!
What's the matter? What's the matter? Come on, let's side again. What's the matter?
Sailors rush onto the deck and gather together. Charlie runs up to the bridge, finds the skipper, and hands him the bracelet.
Look, sir, me find on deck.
Native bracelet.
Crazy black man been here.
What's the matter? Who turned out the crew?
Charlie found this. Someone's been aboard.
Where's Ann?
In her cabin.
No, she isn't. I just looked.
What's the matter, Mr. Driscoll?
Search the ship. Find Miss Darrow.
Jack and Denham search the mess hall.
Ann! Oh, Ann! Did you see her?
No.
I'll look below.
Moments later, Jack comes back on deck. The sailors surround him.
Can't find her!
Can't find her forward.
She's not below.
Can't find her at him.
And gone!
Serve out the rifles and the boats.
Take this ammunition out there. Come on, you fellas, grab these guns. Let's get going. Check these bomb cases and be careful.
Pass those rifles up over the side. Come on!
The men load guns and gas bombs into the rowboat. Charlie approaches with a cleaver.
He ran up through.
Me like he going through. Me like he catching Macy.
Ah, this is no job for a cook. Get out of here. Come on!
Shove her out, men. We're going over the side.
Jack and the men push a boat off the ship.
They've taken Ann!
On the island, the entire community has assembled in front of the gate. Raised torches illuminate the frenzied gathering. The dancers, wearing their gorilla costumes, shuffle in two circles. In the center of the throng, Ann sits on a small platform which is covered with leopard skin. Two guardsmen in grass skirts hold both of her arms. She fearfully looks around, twisting her head in all directions. Warriors frantically beat their drums while the crowd pumps their arms into the air, bouncing to the beat. Holding torches aloft, others scale a rickety ladder to a wooden scaffold. Climbing higher, they scramble to the top of the wall and dance high above the throng. Atop the wall, the chieftain stands on a shelf just above the gate. A large gong hangs behind him, suspended from a beam. He raises his ceremonial staff to the sky, waving it over the gathering. Below, natives begin to unbolt the gate, sliding a 100-foot-long beam out of two slots in the double doors. Nearby, bare-chested men dance frenetically, shaking their torches in the air. On the platform, Anne tries to pull her arms free. Back on the ledge, the chieftain lowers his staff and the gate slowly opens. A raised altar of stone sits just beyond the doors on the edge of the forest. Steps are chiseled into its sides. Two carved pillars stand on top. The crowd parts, forming a passageway. With the witch doctor leading the way, the two guards lead Anne through the crowd toward the gate. Four others follow, wielding torches and staffs. The small group steps through the open doors and approaches the altar. Anne wriggles and squirms in the native's grasp. Staring up at the pillars, her eyes fill with dread. She She wears a pale button dress with a lace collar. Her curly blonde hair cascades past her shoulders. Firelight flickers on her fine-featured face. The men lead her to the top of the altar and strap her arms to either pillar. She stands between each 7-foot-tall column, trembling as the witch doctor fastens the ropes that bind her. He turns a crank on either pillar, tightening each bond, then pins the cranks into place with small animal bones. Anne's chin dimples as she grits her teeth. The witch doctor finishes his task. He scurries down the altar with the guards, leaving Anne alone. They hurry back through the gate. Bare-chested natives close the 90-foot-tall wooden doors behind them, then slide the beam back into place. Shaking spears and shields, others dance before the closed gate. Moments later, the entire community, clambering up ladders and scaffolds, climbs to the top of the wall. Some wear grass skirts, others have loincloths wrapped around their waists. Anne stands 100 feet below, tethered to the pillars. She glances over either shoulder, looking for a chance to free herself. Finding no way out, she hangs her head in misery. Atop the wall, the chieftain assumes his position in front of the gong. He surveys the area, then raises his feathered staff in the air.
Karatane Gong! Otarave Rama Gong! Wasaba Sanamaka! Otarave Rama Gong!
Anne wrenches her head from side to side in despair. Atop the wall, the chieftain waves his staff. 2 young men beat the gong. Suddenly, the ground begins to shake. The natives gape in fear. The chieftain stares into the distance. Coming out of the forest, a large creature knocks over trees heading toward the altar. As it pushes aside 2 trees, we see the creature clearly for the first time. It is a gigantic ape. Anne stares up at the monster, her eyes wide and bulging. He gazes down at her, his massive jaws dropping open in awe. Anne throws back her head in fright. The 60-foot-tall King Kong knocks down 2 large leafy trees to get closer to her, then beats his chest triumphantly. Opening his mouth, he reveals large, sharp teeth. In her terror, Anne tries to climb one of the pillars with her feet in an attempt to break free. Kong stares down at her in delight. He has a thick coat of black fur. His face and chest are dark and leathery. His wide nostrils are flared. Anne manages to loosen the ropes and free one of her hands. Frantically working on the other, she pulls it free but tumbles off the side of the altar. Kong picks her up off the ground, holding her in one hand. She's only a little bit larger than his fist. Watching them, the natives joyfully jump up and down, thrusting their torches into the air. On the other side of the wall, Jack sprints up to the straw huts.
She must be up ahead here!
Carrying rifles, Denham, the skipper, and the others dash after Jack. They speed toward the wall. On the other side, Kong holds the thrashing Anne. Her arms flail wildly in his grip. Kong glances up at the excited natives, then turns away and trudges off. Reaching the gate, Jack peers through a window in one of the doors. Spying Anne with Kong, he cringes in shock.
Man. Hold that thing back!
Let's just see
that fire back! He's got
The sailors slide the beam away from the doors as natives stomp on the ledge high above them. The men pull the gate open.
All right, skipper, you stay here with half the men and guard the gate. Don't let them close it.
All right. Jack rushes through the open doors with Denham and about a dozen sailors. The skipper stays behind with 20 others. Above, the chieftain glares down at the search party. The natives head back down the wall as the small group passes through the gate and runs into the woods. A little later, deep in the forest, Denham and Driscoll head up the crew. They pass leafy trees and six-foot-tall ferns, alertly scanning the area. All of the men carry rifles. Moments later, they walk down a path overgrown with vegetation.
No telling which way went
this darkness. I think she's been through here. Look at those broken
bricks. Yeah, look at that. Keep up, fellas.
You could lose us now.
Ought to be sun up top now.
Yeah. Just listen to those birds. It's dawn, all right.
Look there.
They come upon a giant footprint.
Yeah, that's a track, all right. Look at the size of the thing. He must be as big as a house.
It's a pipe. He's headed this way.
Yeah, come on, fellas, and keep those guns cocked.
He's telling us. I hate to have that thing left alone.
The track resembles a handprint, about 5 feet long. Turning down a path, the group enters a clearing.
There's another one. We're on a trail, all right.
Sure, I know that. Come on, fellas.
A figure approaches in the distance. It's a dinosaur.
Hey, look at that. Keep quiet, he doesn't see us.
It's a stegosaurus. A line of triangular spiny scales runs the length of its broad back.
Those bombs.
A sailor hands Denham a large egg-shaped bomb. The stegosaurus turns down a path, edging closer. As big as an airplane, it has a small reptilian head. It spots the group. As the stegosaurus charges, Denham throws a bomb. A cloud of gas turns the stegosaurus in circles.
Keep quiet.
The beast falls onto its side, hitting the ground hard. The group warily approaches. Several of the men crouch on the forest floor, their rifles pointed at the stegosaurus, which lies only a few feet away. Its chest heaves with each labored breath. Waving its four legs, the dinosaur's round-toed feet paw the air.
Give him another one.
Denham aims. The creature gets back on its feet. As the stegosaurus trudges closer, they all fire into its scaly skin side. The dinosaur collapses again, shaking its legs. With Denham in the lead, the men carefully inch toward it, approaching the head.
Look out, he's still alive. Shoot!
Denham fires into its eye. Lifting its head, the stegosaurus shudders, then grows still.
Come on, I've got him.
They walk past the enormous creature. Each of its arched plates are about the size of a man.
What do you call this thing? Why, something from the dinosaur family.
Dinosaur, eh?
Yes, Jack. A prehistoric beast.
They approach the stegosaurus's tail.
Hey, just look at the length of that brute. If I could only bring back one of these alive.
The dinosaur stirs, rippling its long, spiny tail.
We're after him. Come on, men.
The sailors hurry past the creature.
Boy, one swipe of that.
Later, the search party ambles through a different part of the forest. Thick, leafy branches hang low, forming a canopy above their heads. A thicket of plants runs along either side of the path. Suddenly, they stop.
Watch him, boys. Come on.
Rifles ready. They continue down the path. Moments later, they reach an area obscured by a curtain of fog. Denham peers down at the ground.
Here's his mark again.
Water ahead.
He's down in that fog somewhere.
Well, that's great.
That's him splashing through. Come on.
They head into the fog. After taking a few steps, they come upon the edge of a swamp. A fallen tree trunk rests on the bank. Jack stares into the water at their feet.
Must have swum across. Yeah, well, that's out for us with these guns and bombs. What about these logs for a raft?
Good idea. We'll make a raft. Come on, fellas, get busy.
Put those guns down on the bank. Let's get going.
Later, the newly formed raft sits on the bank with several of the men aboard. Using long tree limbs, several men propel the raft into the water. Others push with their hands. As they hit the water, the men begin to climb aboard. Moments later, the raft glides over the surface, cutting through the fog. Denham stares into the haze and tightly grips his weapon.
Hear anything?
No, he's miles away by now.
We'll be able to pick up his trail, all right.
In the distance, a humongous serpentine head rises up out of the swamp. It's a brontosaurus. Raising its long neck, it spots the group. Water spills from its open mouth.
Listen!
The dinosaur slowly dips below, disappearing underwater. Bubbles percolate along the surface as the creature slinks toward the men. On the raft, one of the sailors pulls them through the swamp as the others peer into the fog.
Quiet!
Suddenly, the brontosaurus rears its head out of the water right beside the raft. The men fire. The beast eyes the group for a moment, then drops below. The raft tilts onto its side. The men slide into the water as the dinosaur emerges out of the swamp with the raft perched on its back. The men furiously swim toward the swamp's edge. The brontosaurus lunges into the water, snatching a sailor in its jaws. The dinosaur releases him. The sailor lands with a giant splash. Another man struggles to tote a box of gas bombs. It slips from his grasp. The brontosaurus grabs a sailor and flings him through the air. One man clutches another, fighting to remain afloat. Both go under. The dinosaur nabs another man, then lets him go. Bobbing on the surface, he arches his back in pain. Jack, Denham, and several others make a mad dash for the bank, their arms thrashing. Moments later, the remaining men run through the shallows. Legs pumping, they throw quick glances over their shoulders. The brontosaurus is hot on their heels. About 100 feet in height, it's as long as a freighter from head to tail. The men, dripping wet, stumble and fall through the marsh as they try to stay ahead of the massive creature. Bringing up the rear, a chubby sailor slips in the mud. He gets to his feet and staggers through ankle-high water, trailing far behind the others. Making it to dry land, Jack urges the men on.
Come on!
The chubby sailor slogs toward the edge of the swamp. The creature's only a few yards behind him. The men race into the forest. The chubby sailor still hasn't caught up. The brontosaurus is right behind him. The man slips and falls again. Attempting to escape the fast-approaching dinosaur, he shimmies up a tree. The beast eyes the man who has climbed up the tree's trunk to the height of the beast's head. The brontosaurus bares its teeth. Running farther into the woods, the other sailors glance back at their desperate comrade. The chubby sailor tries to beat back the creature with his puny fist. The brontosaurus snatches the man into its chops. Jack and the others beat a hasty retreat through the woods. As they dash over a log, one man trips. Jack and Denham help him up. Deeper into the forest, King Kong reaches a steep ravine. A fallen log stretches from one end to the other. Holding an unconscious Ann, he pads across. Not far off, the search party bolts madly through the woods. Kong reaches a small clearing. As the group dashes toward the ravine, Denham's jacket sleeve snags on a branch. Stuck, he tries to rip it free. Unaware of his plight, the others leave him behind. Kong cocks his ear, sets Ann down on the uppermost branch of a dead tree, then heads toward the approaching group. At the mouth of the ravine, Jack gestures to the others. The men scuttle across the mossy log. Just as they're on the verge of reaching the other side, Kong approaches, stomping toward them. Jack grabs onto a thick vine dangling from the log and climbs down to a shelf overlooking the ravine. The other men turn back, scrambling away from the giant ape. Kong grips one end of the log and pries it loose. The sailors grab the trunk, holding on for dear life. Kong lifts the log and shakes a man off. He falls 50 feet and crashes onto the rocks below. From the ledge, Jack stares down at him in horror. Kong twists and turns the log. The men desperately cling to it, holding each other. Kong shakes it vigorously. Another sailor slips and falls into the ravine. Kong lifts the log higher, then bangs it down on the ground. Two others fall, smashing onto the rocks. Two sailors remain on the log. Glowering at them, Kong pumps his fists into the air. He picks up the log again and shakes it. One man dangles, gripping a knob which protrudes from the trunk. As the other man crawls toward him, Kong jerks the log. The man tumbles off and hurtles into the ravine. The first man struggles to get a foothold. Lifting the log higher, Kong wrenches it completely free, then lets it drop. Still clinging to the trunk, the last sailor plunges to his death. On the shelf, Jack stares solemnly down into the ravine. Kong stands directly above him. The first mate inches toward the edge, looking for a way to climb out. Bending down, Kong tries to grab him. Jack backs away, out of the ape's reach. Kong feels around the shelf, then suddenly pulls his hand away. As the ape licks blood off his fingers, Jack wields a dagger on the shelf below. Kong attempts to nab him again. Jack rams the knife into the ape's furry palm. Kong stares down at his hand in puzzlement, his protruding brow furrowing. Jack takes a couple of steps, moving along the ledge. Directly beneath him, a 12-foot lizard climbs a vine, heading straight for Jack. Spotting the creature, Driscoll rears back in fright. He grabs hold of the vine and begins to cut it. The vine breaks. The lizard plummets into the ravine. Nearby, Anne awakes on top of the dead tree. Glancing around, she spots a dinosaur in the distance. It's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. At the mouth of the ravine, Kong cocks his ear. Nearby, the T-Rex stomps toward Anne. Kong bares his teeth at Jack, then rises and hurries off. As the T-Rex reaches Anne, Kong charges toward him. The two face off. The T-Rex stands a head taller. The giant beasts circle each other. Kong leaps onto the dinosaur's back. As he grabs its neck, the T-Rex spins around and around. He shakes the ape off. Kong lands on his back. The T-Rex lunges toward him, opening his jaws. Kong punches the T-Rex's head, then twists and twists. The dinosaur slips out of his grasp. As Kong gets to its feet, Anne watches paralyzed with fear from the top of the tree. Kong swipes at the T-Rex. The dinosaur snaps its chops, then jumps toward his foe and tries to bite Kong's back. The ape knocks the creature off and backs away, giving himself some room. As the T-Rex tries to bite him again, Kong seizes his foot and hurls the dinosaur onto his side. The T-Rex pummels the ape with his long tail. Kong pounds the animal's head. With one swift kick, the T-Rex shoves Kong off. The T-Rex stands, his tail snaking over the forest floor. Kong quickly gets back on his feet to resume the battle. As the T-Rex snaps menacingly, Kong takes hold of the dinosaur's head and flips him over his shoulder. Both tumble to the ground. They quickly rise, facing each other again. Anne hugs herself, cowering on the tree. Kong grabs the T-Rex by the neck. They slowly spin, locked in a tight embrace. As the dinosaur shakes free, Kong stumbles backward and falls against Anne's tree. It topples to the ground, trapping Anne beneath the trunk. She tries to pull her legs out. They won't budge. As Kong grips the T-Rex again, the dinosaur's tail beats against the fallen tree, almost crushing Anne. Kong punches the T-Rex in the mouth, then jumps into the air and grabs his head. The ape clamps the dinosaur's mouth shut and flips him over. The T-Rex, getting to his feet, lashes out at Kong. The ape hops onto the dinosaur's back. Latching onto the T-Rex's jaws, he pries them wide open. Anne wrings her hands and fidgets in fright. Kong knocks the dinosaur to the ground. He rolls the T-Rex onto his side, then rips the dinosaur's jaws open. Blood trickles from the sides of the T-Rex's mouth as the ape pulls harder and harder. The dinosaur's head slips out of Kong's grasp, but the ape sits on the dinosaur's neck, pinning him to the ground. He grabs the T-Rex's jaws and forces them open again. He then presses down on the dinosaur's snout and crushes it. As Kong loosens his hold, the T-Rex lies still. Kong works the T-Rex's loose, lifeless jaw, then triumphantly beats his own chest. He lurches toward Anne, who's still trapped beneath a tree, and gazes down at her. Kong easily lifts the tree, freeing the young woman. She crawls out from under it. He picks her up and stares at her, his eyes sparkling with affection. She squirms in his grasp, her bare legs frantically kicking his knuckled hands and black leathery fingers. He beams down at her, his savage teeth baring in a broad grin. Turning away, he carries her off. Back at the ravine, Jack grabs onto a vine dangling over the shelf. He tests its strength, then begins to climb it. Struggling hand over hand, he reaches the mouth of the ravine. Denham stands on the other side.
Hey, Jack! Jack Briscoe! Hey, Jack!
Denham, I didn't get you, huh?
No, I got to cover same as you. Think we're safe now?
There are only two of us left alive to save that girl.
Well, I can't get across now.
I don't want you to. You got to land back and get some more bombs.
Why, you wouldn't follow that beast alone.
Someone's got to stay on his trail while it's hot. Now, maybe I'll get a chance to sneak her away, but if I don't, I'll figure some way to signal you where he's taking her.
Well, I guess that's our only out.
Sure it is. Get going. And don't get yourself killed if you see Engelhorn.
Okay, Jack. Good luck.
Denham breaks into a run, heading back toward the gate. He stops for a moment and glances over his shoulder, then takes off. On the other side of the ravine, Jack jogs deeper into the forest. He leaps over plants and bushes, then pauses to scan the area. Spying a clearing, he heads toward it. The T-Rex lies on the ground. Several vultures take to the air, flapping over his head. In the distance, Kong wanders off with Anne. Jack, stepping through the underbrush, carefully inches up to the fallen dinosaur. Another vulture squats on the creature's jaw as blood gushes from the T-Rex's mouth. The bird dips its beak into the pumping stream. Spotting Jack, the bird flies away. The T-Rex stirs slightly. Jack hurries off, hopping over the nearby fallen tree. In another part of the forest, Anne lies faint in Kong's grip. Hot on their trail, Jack's not far behind. Stopping, he glances around. Huge fanning palms and ferns surround him. Jack listens, then continues down the overgrown path. Back at the gate, Skipper Engelhorn and the other sailors stand around Denham, who sits drinking from a canteen.
I tell you, Skipper, this Kong is the biggest thing in the world. Why, I shook those men off that log like they were flies.
All those men lost. It's incredible.
Driscoll said he'd try and signal us if he found Anne.
You'll never see either one of them again.
Don't give up, Skipper. There's still a chance for Driscoll.
Well, we'll have to wait till daylight. Then we'll bridge that ravine. Where's that other case of bombs?
Here, sir.
This monster you've seen, you think your bombs will stop him?
If we can get close enough to use them, you bet they'll stop him. Oh, have you had any trouble with the natives?
Yes, right after you left.
What happened?
We fired a couple of volleys over their heads and they took to the huts like scared rabbits.
Gunpowder is something new in their lives, huh?
Yeah, they're terrified.
They haven't shown up since.
Well, Briggs, take a man with you up on the wall. Keep your eyes peeled. We'll leave at dawn, whether we get a signal from Driscoll or not.
Yes, sir.
Back in the forest, Kong ambles up a slope with Ann in his fist. With a slow, plodding gait, he rolls his shoulders from side to side. Skull Mountain looms up ahead. The ape stops, looks around, then starts down the other side of the hill. Jack shadows him carefully. A little later, Kong stands at an opening at the base of the mountain. The rock face has eroded into a jagged archway, forming the entrance to a cavern. A breeze wafts from inside, bristling his furry coat. He glances down at Ann for a moment, then enters. Following him, Jack scrambles over big boulders, which are no larger than footstones to the mammoth Kong. Inside the cavern, which has a tall, cathedral-like ceiling, Kong trudges around a shallow pool of water. Vapors rise from fumaroles along the cave floor. Just behind him, Jack follows unseen. Kong sets down Ann on a rocky ledge 20 feet off the ground. She takes a couple of steps back, ducking into a corner. Kong turns away to gather something from the cave floor. As Ann shrinks against the ledge, a massive snake-like monster slithers up toward her. She bites her lip. Extending its head, the reptile reaches out, its long tongue flicking. Kong quickly turns back to grab hold of the monster. The reptile coils its long body around the ape's neck and squeezes. Kong tightly grips the monster's neck. The reptile slips loose. Kong tries to punch it. The monster dodges and weaves away from the ape's mighty fists. Near the mouth of the cave, Jack watches in horror and hides behind a boulder. As the monster lunges toward Kong's shoulder, the ape seizes it. The monster winds its tail around the ape's throat and tries to bite him in the face. Kong frees his neck, then presses the monster's head to the ground. The reptile gets its tail around the ape's neck again. Enraged, Kong bears long, fang-like incisors. Pawing at his throat, he attempts to loosen the monster's hold. The reptile tightens its grasp and looks for a way to climb down the ledge, but Kong and the monster are too close. The ape manages to unwind the reptile's tail while holding its neck in the other hand. The monster snaps at him. The ape picks it up and smashes its head on the cavern floor. The monster dangles limply in Kong's hand. He beats his chest victoriously, then reaches for Ann and carries her off. Jack, stepping out from behind the boulder, watches Kong scale a ledge to an opening 80 feet off the ground. Exiting the cave, Kong takes Ann to a cliff jutting from the side of the mountain. He sets her down, then peers over the edge at the calm, misty forest. He steps to the other side of the cliff and gazes off that edge. Standing tall, he fervently pounds his chest again. Clutching at the rocky wall behind her, Anne stares at him, her eyes wide, her mouth open. As he turns back to her, she slowly slides to the ground, collapsing in a dead faint. Kong picks her up, then sits, holding her in his palm. Her pale legs dangle from his black-haired hand. With a gentle touch, he peels off pieces of her dress, exposing more of her smooth, creamy legs. Kong holds up a piece of the delicate fabric, examining it curiously. He feels the cloth with his fingers, then pulls away another piece from her dress. Kong brings the material up to his flared nostrils and sniffs. Anne groggily stirs, her eyelids heavy. Her lacy slip spaghetti strap hangs off one bare shoulder. Opening her eyes, she gazes up at Kong, her chest heaving with deep, frightened breaths. She struggles to force his fingers open. They don't budge an inch. Kicking, she tries to wriggle free. It's no use. Gazing at her, he tickles her side. She tosses her curly blonde mane indignantly, then tries to push out of his grasp. He tickles her belly. She thrashes around, writhing and twisting in his hand. He tickles her head and neck. Then he holds his fingers up to his nose to smell her. His nostrils twitch at the unfamiliar scent. Near the cave entrance, Jack unknowingly reaches for a loose boulder. Con turns toward the sound. He sets down Anne, then ambles to the opening, knuckle-walking on all fours. The ape steps inside the cave and looks around. On the cliff, a bird flaps overhead as Anne crawls toward the edge. In the cave, Kong continues to glance around. Outside, Anne inches right up to the edge and peers down. From out of nowhere, a pterodactyl swoops toward her. It flaps bat-like wings, thick membranes stretched over fine skeletal arms. Its head is elongated with a sharp pointy beak. The enormous winged dinosaur tries to scoop her up in its talons. Just as the dinosaur snatches Anne and starts to carry her off, Con rushes out of the cave and seizes the creature. Pulling on the pterodactyl's wings, he draws it close. Anne falls out of its talons and lands back on the cliff. As the pterodactyl fights Con, battling to break free, Anne crawls away from them. She scampers backward and heads toward the cavern entrance. Con chokes the pterodactyl, which tries to peck him with its beak. Nearby, Jack rushes out of the cave to Anne's side and covers her mouth. He helps her up, and they run to a vine at the edge of the cliff. Kong releases the pterodactyl, which listlessly hangs over the edge. Behind him, Jack tests the vine's strength, then swings his legs over the side. Anne climbs onto his back. They start to scale down. Oblivious, Kong examines the pterodactyl's broken neck. Dozens of yards below, Jack climbs down the vine with Anne on his back, her arms draped around his neck. Kong releases the pterodactyl. It drops out of sight, plummeting over the side of the steep mountain. Kong stares after it, then turns back, searching for Anne. Not finding her on the cliff, he peers over the side. Jack and Anne continue their downward climb. With his legs wrapped around the vine, Driscoll lowers them hand over hand. Kong seizes the vine and begins to pull them back up. Petrified, Anne frantically kicks her legs. The vine sways wildly as Kong yanks it up. The pair almost smashes into the side of the mountain, but Jack kicks against the rock face to avoid a collision. As they swing away from the mountain, Anne slips off Driscoll's back and plunges toward the ground. Jack lets go and dives after her. Watching them drop, Kong beats the air with his fist. Jack and Anne splash into a lake hundreds of feet below. In the murky water, they swim toward the surface. Jack pokes his head out. Anne pops up beside him. Grabbing her waist, he helps her float off. Kong glares after them. He dashes back to the cave. Later, Jack carries Anne up a hill, heading away from Skull Mountain. He sets her down, and they run off together. Back at the gate, Denham, the skipper, and the others sit around a small campfire. Several men snooze on steps leading up the wall. Their rifles rest beside them. One sailor whittles a small stick. On the shelf, beside the chieftain's gong, two sailors stand watch. In the forest, Jack and Anne race desperately toward the gate as leafy branches constantly beat at them on the overgrown path. Anne's wet, straggly hair hangs over her bare shoulders. Atop the wall, a sailor spots them.
Hey, look!
Anne trips. Jack carries her the rest of the way.
Hey, Baloo! Mr. Denham! Captain Englehorn! Mr. Driscoll and the lady! They're coming back!
The sailors get to their feet and hurry to the gate. Jack carries Anne through the open doors.
Are you both all right?
The skipper offers Anne his flask. Yes. She shakes her head.
I'm all right.
She collapses.
What happened? How'd you do it?
Came down the river.
Oh, Jack!
There, you're safe now. We'll have you back on the ship in no time.
Jack and the skipper help her stand.
Wait a minute. What about Kong?
Well, what about him?
We came here to get a moving picture, and we found something worth more than all the movies in the world.
What?
We've got those gas bombs. If we can capture them alive...
Why, you're crazy.
Besides that, he's on a cliff where a whole army couldn't get at him.
Yeah, if he stays there. But we've got something he wants.
He eyes Ann.
Yeah, something he won't get again.
Hey, look out! It's Kong! Kong's coming!
The crew begins to shut the heavy 100-foot-tall doors. Three of the men start to slide the long beam into place. Atop the wall, a sailor beats the gong. Natives dash out of their huts. One man leaps out of a house set high on a platform. He crashes onto a cage of chickens, breaking it open. The newly freed birds scatter in all directions. At the gate, the beam locks into place.
Quick! The natives are coming!
Where were? Come on!
Bingo!
Natives sprint toward the gate in a mad dash. On the other side, Kong trudges up and bangs on the doors. Sailors and natives push against them, fighting to keep the gate closed. Kong pounds harder. The doors start to crack open. Other natives rush from their homes to help in the struggle. Denim urges them on, then joins the fight. Above their heads, the beam begins to give. A sailor sticks his rifle through a window near the bottom of the gate and aims at Kong. The shot goes wide. Kong presses all of his weight against the doors. The beam starts to splinter. Kong pushes harder, leaning forcefully. On the other side, natives and sailors throw their bodies against the doors. Kong presses with all of his might. The beam snaps in two. Natives and sailors rush from the gate as the doors fly open. Kong bares his teeth at the fleeing men. Native women bolt from their homes. A heavy-set mother, her mouth wide open in a scream, totes a toddler on her shoulder. Men wielding torches scurry through the village after the women. Kong flails his arms, then charges after them. A large straw hut blocks his path. He beats it into the ground, picks up the thatched roof, and hurls it, crushing two natives. In the middle of the natives' village, Denim waves the sailors toward the beach. A crying toddler sits in the center of the panic. A woman spies the child through the window of a hut. Kong approaches only a few yards behind the baby. Dashing over, the woman sweeps up the toddler out of the ape's path. Kong strides onward. Warriors stand on a wooden scaffold 30 feet off the ground. Kong marches up. They hurl spears at him. One sinks into his shoulder. Kong pulls out the tiny spear and flings it away. He rips a tree out of the ground and uses it to knock a few of the men off the scaffold. Throwing the trunk away, he squashes several others. Kong picks up a warrior and sticks him in his mouth. Caught between the ape's huge teeth, the man pushes against Kong's lips, then falls unconscious. Kong pulls him out and flings him to the ground. On the scaffold, other warriors sling spears at the ape. Kong pounds the structure with his fist. The scaffold crumbles into pieces, pitching the natives to the ground. At the ape's feet, a warrior heaves a spear at Kong, hitting him in the side. The beast pulls it out, then charges through the village. He smashes a hut set on stilts, beating it furiously. Kong picks up a native and crams him into his mouth. As he drops him, another man leaps from a nearby hut. Kong picks him up, eyes him for a moment, then dashes him to the ground. He steps on the man's head and grinds him into the sediment with his heel. Spotting yet another native in the hut, Kong grabs him. The man thrashes in his grasp as the ape bites down on his head. Hurling the man to the ground, he crushes him with his foot. Kong moves on to continue his rampage. At the beach, sailors grab boxes of ammunition out of their boat. Kong approaches, pounding his chest. Denim hurls a gas bomb at him. It explodes in a cloud of smoke and sparks. Kong sways, wiping his eyes. He clutches his throat, then rubs his forehead. Denim and the others watch nervously from the boat. Kong stumbles, gripping his throat. He staggers forward and collapses on the beach. tries to crawl, sliding over the sand, but only manages to move a few feet. Dropping his head, he lies unconscious. Denham runs up to the beast, gesturing to the sailors.
Come on! Come on, I got him! He'll be out for hours. Send to the ship for anchor chains and tools.
What are you going to do?
To build a raft to float him to the ship. Why, the whole world will pay to see this.
No chains will ever hold that.
We'll give him more than chains. He's always been king of his world, but we'll teach him fear. We're millionaires, boys. I'll share it with all of you. Why, in a few months, it'll be up in lights on Broadway. Kong, the eighth wonder of the world!
Now a lighted sign above a theater reads, King Kong, eighth wonder of the world. With a smaller one below it, Carl Denham's giant monster. Uniformed policemen mill about the entrance while hundreds of theatergoers stand in several lines.
Say, what's Denham got anyway? Well, it better be good after all this ballyhoo.
Heavens, what a mob.
Well, you would come. These tickets cost me $20.
Inside, a curtain hangs across a stage. As formally dressed ticket holders find their seats, an older woman stands with an usher at the front of the theater.
I can't sit so near the screen. It hurts my eyes.
This is not a moving picture, madam.
What? But Mr. Denham makes those pictures of those darling monkeys and tigers and things.
But this is more in the nature of a personal appearance, madam.
Well, I never thought I was going to see something.
Say, what is it anyhow?
I hear it's a kind of a gorilla.
Gee, ain't we got enough of them in New York?
Two men rudely step over the couple as they head to their seats. Backstage, Jack and Ann.
I do like to look at him, Jack. It makes me think of that awful day on the island.
I wouldn't have brought you, but, well, you know how Denham insisted.
Of course, we had to come when he said it would help the show. Do you think we'll really make a lot of money?
Well, enough to pay him back for these clothes, anyway.
Jack fingers his tux.
You know, it's the first time I ever had on one of these open front suits.
Hello there, you're just in time. Gee, Ann, you look great. I'm glad I dressed you up for this show. Well, Jack, $10,000 in the box office. Not bad for one night, huh?
Hey, that's a lot of money.
Ah, that's nothing. We're going to do that every night.
Look at the size of that animal.
Hope he's tied up good and tight.
Sure he is. Denham's taking no chances.
Oh, here the boys from the press. Come in, boys. This is Mr. Arrow and Mr. Driscoll.
How do you do? Yeah.
It was Mr. Driscoll saved you from the ape, wasn't it?
Yes, he was alone, too. All the sailors with him have been killed.
Alone, eh? How'd you ever tackle that baby?
Well, Mr. Denham got him. The rest of us were running like scared rabbits. But Mr. Denham had the nerve to stand there and chuck bombs.
Oh, so you're the hero. Come on, give us a story.
Wait a minute. Lay off me, boys. Miss Darrow's the story. If it hadn't been for her, we couldn't have gotten near Kong. He followed her back to the village.
Beauty and the Beast, huh?
That's it. Play up that angle. Beauty and the Beast. Kong could have stayed safe where he was, but he couldn't stay away from Beauty. That's your story, boys.
That's a story.
How about a few pictures?
Just a minute. I want you to come out on the stage and take your flashlights out there in front of the audience. I'll go out now and make a speech, tell them about Kong, Miss Darrow, and Mr. Driscoll. Then when I call you, you come out there and take the pictures, eh?
Okay.
Stand by, Ann, when I call you. Now, it's all right. We've knocked some of the fight out of him since you saw him.
He pats her hand, then exits the wings. Denham steps on stage. Facing the packed crowd, he bows with several brief nods. He wears a tuxedo with tails and a white tie and vest.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here tonight to tell you a very strange story. A story so strange that no one will believe it. But ladies and gentlemen, seeing is believing. And we, my partners and I, have brought back the living proof of our adventure. An adventure in which 12 of our party met horrible death. And now, ladies and gentlemen, before I tell you any more, I'm going to show you the greatest thing your eyes have ever beheld. He was a king and a god in the world he knew. But now he comes to civilization, merely a captive, a show to gratify your curiosity. Ladies and gentlemen, look at Kong, the eighth wonder of the world.
The curtain rises, revealing Kong shackled on a huge platform. A metal crossbeam behind his head connects the cuffs on his wrists. A metal belt strapped around his waist is chained to the metal stand. His eyes scan the fidgeting audience.
And now I want to introduce Miss Ann Darrow, bravest girl I have ever known.
and steps on stage, wearing an elegant white gown. Kong peers down as Denham takes her hand.
There the beast, and here the beauty. She has lived through an experience no other woman ever dreamed of. And she was saved from the very grasp of Kong by her future husband. I want you to meet a very brave gentleman, Mr. John Driscoll.
Jack walks onto the stage and takes his place beside Anne. Kong stares down at the threesome. He shifts, but his chains hold fast.
And now before I tell you the full story of our voyage, I'm going to ask the gentlemen of the press to come forward so that the audience may have the privilege of seeing them take the first photographs of Kong and his captors. All right, boys.
Gripping their cameras, a dozen photographers step out onto the stage.
Sparrow first alone. Stand in front of Kong, okay?
Denham guides Anne to the front of Kong's platform.
All set, Jack?
Okay.
Make it a good one. Shoot.
Flash bulbs pop as the photographers point their cameras at the ape. Enraged, Kong shakes his head.
Don't be alarmed, ladies and gentlemen. Those chains are made of chrome steel.
The audience gazes up at Kong in complete awe.
It's all right, Anne.
Get them together, boys. They're going to be married tomorrow.
Put your arm around her, Driscoll.
Flash bulbs burst as they take more pictures.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold on. He thinks you're attacking the girl.
All of them roaring. Well, picture.
Baring his teeth, Kong struggles wildly against his shackles. As more flashes explode, he rips one arm free. Kong pulls his other hand free. The audience parts, scattering for the aisles. Denham, Anne, and Jack rush from the stage. Kong breaks the chain binding him to the platform. Jumping down, he pulls off the metal belt in one of the cuffs, then charges into the wings. In the maddening crowd, a woman faints, tumbling past now empty seats. Kong knocks down the walls of the theater and lurches onto the street outside. Swerving to avoid him, a car crashes into a hotel entrance. Dashing past, Anne and Jack step through revolving doors to enter the hotel. Kong lifts a tuxedoed man into the air and stuffs him into his mouth. He flings him into the stampeding crowd below. The ape breaks off a piece of awning and hurls it onto two men. Nearby, a policeman speaks into a call box.
Send the riot squad, an ambulance, and Kong has escaped!
A beautiful brunette leans out of a hotel window with wide, awestruck eyes. Kong glances up, searching for her. She quickly pulls her head inside. He climbs up, scaling the windowsills. Now, officers on motorcycles roll out of a yard. Two carloads of cops follow. A fire engine speeds down a street. Back at the hotel, Kong climbs higher and higher, halfway up the skyscraper. Several floors above, a woman dressed in pale silk pajamas sleeps in a bed. Coming up to her window, Kong peers inside. He reaches in and snatches her. Her legs kick violently as he lifts her out of the room. He examines her brunette hair and plain-featured face, then releases her. She falls dozens of stories toward the sidewalk. Kong stares after her, then continues his climb. Inside the hotel, Jack and Anne rush into a room. As she sits on the bed, he kneels beside her.
You're safe now, dear.
It's like a horrible dream. It's like being back on the island again.
Now, it's all right. Don't worry. I'm going to stay right here with you. Anyhow, you know they're bound to get him.
Behind them, Kong climbs up to their window and peers in. On the street below, spotlights shine over a mob. Kong breaks the window and reaches into the room. Covering her eyes with her arm, Anne passes out on the bed. Jack smashes a chair against the massive paw. He's knocked backward and falls to the floor unconscious. Kong drags the bed closer to the window. As Anne wakes, her eyes fly open in terror. Kong picks her up and lifts her out of the room. Rises and stares out after them. Dozens of stories above the ground, Anne kicks and thrashes in Kong's grasp. The ape gazes at her, then starts to scale higher, heading toward the roof. Back inside the room, Jack glances out the window, then runs to the door and dashes out. As he speeds into the corridor, Denham sprints up to him.
Jack, he's climbing up outside there.
He's got a hand. He's taking her out the roof, quick.
They head for a stairwell. On the street, onlookers rush to and fro as fire engines pull up. On the hotel roof, Kong's head appears. He sets down Anne, then clambers over the wall. He stares curiously over the wall, his furry arms hanging at his sides. Below, spotlights sweep over the massing mob up the sides of the hotel. At his feet, Anne slowly begins to crawl off, scrambling on her side across the roof. Kong turns back and scoops her up. He walks to the other side of the roof and glances all around. In his hand, Anne hysterically swings her arms and legs. Kong gingerly touches her, then heads back down the building. Jack and Denham rush onto the roof, too late. They re-enter the hotel. Down on the street, panicked people dart out of Kong's path. Still clutching Anne, he swipes at two passers-by, then turns toward an elevated train behind him. It zooms down a track, level with Kong's head. As the train continues on its way, Kong pounds the track, denting it out of shape. Pressing his hands onto it, he lifts himself off the ground to peer down the track. In the distance, another train approaches, its headlights gleaming. On board, strap hangers read newspapers, while other passengers fill up the seats. Bending under the track, Kong lifts it back into place with his neck and shoulders. The train speeds closer and closer. Kong wrenches loose several support beams and flings them to the ground. Then, he knocks away a few of the rails to make a hole in the tracks. In the front car, the motorman spots the giant ape. His eyes widening in shock, he switches on the brakes. The train skids to a stop, sliding partially into the hole. On board, passengers slam against one another as the lights go out. Kong peeks into the train. In the darkness, passengers help each other up. They scurry in all directions, looking for an exit. Kong pulls the front car off the track. It slams onto the ground. On board, passengers tumble from one end of the car to the other. Kong smashes his fist through a window, then pounds large dents into the side of the car. Still holding Anne, he turns away, then climbs up a nearby skyscraper. Now at a police station, Denham, Jack, reporters, and policemen listen to a radio.
Attention all stations. Kong is going west. He is making for the Empire State Building. Stand by for further reports.
He goes up there. What can we do?
We won't be able to get near him.
Kong is climbing the Empire State Building. He is still carrying Ann Darrow. That is all.
That licks us. There's one thing we haven't thought of.
What?
Airplanes. If he should put Ann down and they can fly close enough to pick him off without hitting her.
You're right. Plane. Call the field. Oh, boy, what a story. Come on, Jim.
At an airstrip, four biplanes take off, soaring into the air. Each has two wings, one above and one below the fuselage. Back in the city, Kong scales the Empire State Building. Over 100 stories tall, the Art Deco-style skyscraper towers over the city. From a distance, Kong appears no larger than a bug as he climbs, carrying Anne in one paw. Near the top, he almost slips, but regains his grip. Below, Denham and Jack run up to the entrance.
Here come the planes! Bail, Denham!
The four planes fly in tight formation.
Can I shoot him and not hit Anne?
Don't get on the road! Come here,
help me shoot!
The uniformed lieutenant dashes into the building behind Denham and Jack. Above, propellers whirl as the four single-engine planes drop closer to the skyscraper. Still climbing, Kong reaches a slender tower at the top of the building as the planes draw nearer and nearer. At the tower's apex, he holds on with one hand while holding Anne in the other. Looking up at the sky, he eyes the planes circling overhead. On board one of the two-seater planes, the pilot points out Kong to his gunner, who aims a turret machine gun at the ape. Both wear goggles, leather caps, white scarves, and bomber jackets. The planes bank around. On the tower, Anne squirms in Kong's hand. Back in the plane, the pilot shakes his head at the gunner, gesturing to the woman. He mouths the words, "Don't shoot, he's got the girl." On the tower, Kong sets Anne on a narrow ledge, then waves his paw at the planes. A light wind ruffles her blonde hair as she lies across the steel ledge and gazes up at Kong. The ape climbs to the very top of the tower and pounds his chest. The gunner aims his machine gun as the plane swoops down, heading straight for Kong. Kong swipes at the plane. It loops into a complete barrel roll. Anne fearfully watches from the ledge. The second plane dives toward Kong, its nose pointed at the ape. Missing him, it veers off. The third and fourth planes curl down, then speed toward the ape. Sailing past him, they split off in two different directions. Kong paws the air, baring his teeth. On the ledge, Anne glances up in fright. As a plane swoops down, a gunner points his machine gun. Missing the mark, the plane banks into a U-turn and swings back down for a second chance. Kong tries to snatch it, but it's too far out of reach. Guns blazing, another plane zips past him, too quickly to grab. It zooms behind the ape, banking around for another approach. As it speeds up to Kong, he catches its wingtip and flings it toward the ground. Our view spins wildly as the plane hurtles hundreds of feet, smoke streaming from its engine. It knocks into the side of the building as it plummets. Another plane comes in with its front-mounted guns blazing. The pilot strafes Kong in the chest. He painfully presses a paw to his wound, a hole in his left breast. The plane sweeps around as another fires at the ape. He tries to grab both, but they slip away. He pokes his bloody wound with his finger and stares down at it in awe. The two planes come around again. Stretching out his arm, Kong reaches for one, but it's too far away. Doubling over, the massive ape wipes his brow and teeters. As another plane comes around, the pilot fires his front guns. Atop the tower, Kong slips, but manages to hang on. In one of the planes, a gunner taps a pilot on the shoulder and points at Kong. The ape reaches for Anne, who still lies on the ledge. He turns away from her to eye the three planes circling nearby, then touches his wound again. He picks her up. She writhes and kicks. Kong gazes at her with tenderness, then sets her down again. He strokes her affectionately, his fingers running along her hair. From out of nowhere, a plane swoops down. The bullets hit Kong in the neck. He grabs his throat and leans against the tower, staring limply down at Anne. With hooded eyes, he looks up at the sky. His brow furrows in despair. His lips curl into a pained grimace. Another plane comes around again. Kong's hit in the shoulder and leans backward, almost falling off the tower. As he tilts precariously, his paw slips. He plummets down the side of the building, knocking and banging against it. Atop the tower, Jack steps out of an access door and gazes up at Anne, who still lies on the ledge. Jack clambers up a ladder to the ledge and embraces her. She clings to him, her chest heaving. They glance downward. 100 stories below, Kong lies across a street, surrounded by a curious mob. A line of officers keeps the crowd back. As Denham pushes to the front, policemen restrain him.
Wait a minute. Let me through, officer. My name's Denham.
Just a moment. Oh, Lieutenant.
Lieutenant, I'm Carl Denham.
Carl Denham?
Denham? Oh, that's the man that captured the mob.
Denham and the lieutenant step closer to Kong.
Well, Denham, the airplane's got him. Oh, no. It wasn't the airplanes. It
was Beauty killed the beast.
He stares at Khan, his face filled with remorse. Fade to black. A title reads, The End.